On his imminent death from cancer, the public intellectual Christopher Hitchens reflected, "I don't have a body, I am a body." A few years ago, an HR director told me that the partners in their law firm had largely forgotten this. Everything operates from the neck up. Their bodies are just the means to ferry around the value creation system. Today, we understand why this is such a profoundly limiting worldview. The principal mission of the brain isn't thought, creativity, or empathy, as we might like to think. It's to keep our metabolism in check, to keep us alive, and then it's to move. When we truly understand this, our ability to become more productive, satisfied, and enjoy greater well-being starts to unfold. In this show, we talk to Kerry Cullen, whose life work has been about helping people to tap into the resources that enable this. She's one of a growing number of experts who are operationalizing the research work into polyvagal theory with her clients. Part of this show is an exercise that Kerry leads us through to increase our sense of safety and connection, and it involves getting into a deep state of relaxation. So you don't want to be listening to this in the car. Enjoy the power of embracing your full self with Kerry Cullen.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to the Evolving Leader Podcast. I'm Scott Allender.
And I'm John Gomes.
How are you feeling on this Friday, my friend?
I have had one of those weeks. I have had a week of a lot of demand and wonderful, great stuff happening. But oh, my goodness, I am tired and and slightly bewildered as well. So how are you feeling?
I resonate with all of that. It's been a week. It's been a good week, but it's been a full-on week. A week where every day felt a little like Monday. But I'm also feeling simultaneously invigorated. You and I have been doing our sort of cold shower therapy for a couple of, well, not together, but each of us on our own, in our own houses and in our own country for a while, knowing the benefits of that. And I was doing it for the 2 minutes at the end, and I just started this week of just doing the whole thing cold, and it's been like really helpful. So as tough as this week has been, it's also, I felt really alive and really awake and able to handle the challenges. I'm curious if our guest today will have a view on any of that. I've been looking forward to this conversation because today we are joined by Kerry Cullen. She's a business psychologist who's been coaching for 20 years. She aspires to create a coaching environment where people can come home to themselves. Her work spans the public and private sector, and she works internationally. She loves exploring new edges in coaching and discovering and training in polyvagal theory, felt like coming home to herself. Kerry has launched a polyvagal course for coaches under the auspices of Deb Dana, who was one of the first clinicians to create a system for using polyvagal theory in therapy for complex trauma. And we are really eager to get into this conversation with you today, Kerry. I feel like this is a conversation that I need to have. And so welcome to the Evolving Leader Podcast.
Well, thank you. And what a delight to be here. So thank you for having me on.
Kerry, welcome to the show. And of anybody who we need to ask this question, how are you feeling?
Well, I've had one of those weeks. It's been a week of full-on human experience, I would say. So being honest, I feel a little ache in my heart. My uncle died yesterday, so I'm very present with that. And that brings that reminder of just how, we just don't know in life. So it really brings me into a place of cherishing and being very grateful to be here. And it makes me feel a bit playful. don't know, right? So a lot going on. Yeah, so that's how I am.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for being here today, given what's going on in your life. All right. So, well, before we get into this fascinating topic, can we get a sense of your journey and the challenges that you faced in becoming interesting in solving for your clients over the course of your career?
I would say that I'm a bit of a wanderer. They call the vagus nerve the wandering nerve. I'm also a bit of a wanderer. I love to learn. I love to experiment. And I often find myself on the edges of new learning and with a curiosity of how to integrate this. And in terms of the challenge that I'm trying to solve, I'm really curious around how do we remember our resources in the face of challenge? That is a question that I just come back to time and time again. And how can we remind each other because we forget? So that's kind of my North Star that it's always in my top pocket as a question to try and understand more and more about that.
So let's just quickly get the definition of resources out there for people.
Yeah, so resources in terms of, you know, when we're facing into challenge, what can we come back into? What can help us navigate this and come through this? So for me, I've been exploring somatic resources and different models of coaching. And then, as you mentioned, I came across polyvagal theory a number of years ago. And at a very difficult time in my life, in fact, I'd been diagnosed with needing to have brain surgery. And at the time, I was quite deep into the study of polyvagal theory. And I found that to be an incredibly helpful framework to navigate that time. So that's what I mean by resources.
So let's set up for our listeners some background on polyvagal theory. Can you give us a beginner's guide to the theory and what it all entails?
Yeah. So polyvagal theory is the theory of Stephen Porges, who is a neuroscientist. And then Deb Dana has done a lot of work with Stephen Porges. She's a clinician in making this theory accessible and practical. How do we work with this? So it's a theory of our nervous system, our autonomic nervous system, and how that influences how we show up in the world, how it influences our ability to be present. So that's what it's about. And there are three organizing principles in that. One is around the principle of neuroception. And this is linked to our nervous system always being in conversation with our environment. I like to think of this as a cellular conversation. And this conversation is going on beneath our level of conscious awareness. So we're not conscious of this, but we're always in this conversation. Are we safe or not? And it's reading, our nervous system is reading our environment. It's reading cues from inside our body. And then also in the relationship between us.
Is neuroception synonymous with interoception, or is there something different there?
So neuroception is automatic and it's below our level of conscious awareness.
Okay.
Interoception is then when we're bringing awareness to that. So helpful to be able to do, to actually bring awareness to those body sensations so we can get information from that. So yeah, good question. Yeah. And I love what Stephen Porges says when our body is reading for these cues of safety and danger. He says, it doesn't do appropriate. It just does what it does to keep us safe. And there's something I find very liberating in that. So in other words, we might find ourselves showing up not as we want to show up. And our nervous system could be playing a role in that. So to give you an example, a number of years ago, I was doing a presentation to MBA students, and I just lost my voice. I couldn't speak. So from a rational point of view, I felt very safe and I was very happy to be there. But something happened in my nervous system that it was giving me those cues. This is not safe. So and I actually spent a long time trying to understand that. And actually it was more helpful to think about, I don't know what was going on, but it's what happened. There was some cue there that just didn't feel safe. And then my nervous system responded. Then the second principle is around hierarchy. So if we think, and Deb Dana has come up with this as an analogy. So we might imagine a ladder up against a wall and a ladder that has three sections, a top section, a middle section, and then a bottom section. So if we're feeling safe and connected and there's more of a preponderance of those cues of safety, then we're at the top of that ladder, which we call ventral vagal, or we might want to call it flow. It's looking for language that resonates. And when we're in that place, that is where we can find collaboration. That is where we can be curious. And that is where we can have a sense of connection and awe and ease in our system. If there's more preponderance of cues of danger, then we start to move down that ladder into that middle section, into a place of mobilization. And this is where we will know the fight or flight that lives in this territory. So it's more where we're mobilized. Our breathing will go shallower. From a somatic point of view, I think we go a bit ahead of ourselves, and we lose some of our sense of feeling on top of things. We start to feel a bit disorganized and then defensive. And we're more likely to hear things in a defensive way when we're in that place. And then from a behavioral perspective, we might find seeking behavior comes in. I know for me, if I have a lot of sympathetic or mobilized energy running, I might start to look online for something that I don't really need. This kind of behavior can kick in when we're in that space.
Is this why I buy a ton of stuff off of Instagram that I don't need? Is this an indication that I'm in that space?
It could be, yeah. Scott. It could be.
It's a safe bet.
And then if there's more cues of danger, we will go even further down this ladder into what we call a dorsal disconnected space. And this is a space where, you know, from a somatic point of view, there's more collapse in our system. We're actually withdrawing. We're trying to become more invisible as a way of keeping ourselves safe. We feel number. There's a sense of disconnection. And we lose a sense of agency. So we feel a bit behind things now. So, and it's not that these states are buckets. We can tip into that a little bit, you know, where, so for example, for me, if I'm in a conflict conversation, I'll find myself dissociating a little bit. And then it's about working then to keep myself present in that conversation. You know, or, you know, we can have a spectrum that we can feel quite down in that space, but they're not buckets.
So we've got this constant unconscious monitoring system for our safety, with our nervous system. And I think it's important just to remind people what you just said there. It's not grounded in our perception. This is happening. It's not coming from the prefrontal cortex. This is coming from the kind of more ancient parts of our brain and how we developed. And so it isn't using the thinking parts of the brain. But when it's activated, it quickly engages that brain into an interpretation. So either we are highly consciously aware, and what Scott said about interoception means that we can kind of catch it soon, or if we don't catch it soon, then it kind of hijacks us and we start to tell a negative story around this, or a disempowered story. So can we talk a little bit about that and how it plays out in how we make sense of things?
Yeah, absolutely. And in polyvagal, we talk about story follow state. So perhaps if I give you an example of that, if I go back to when I got my brain diagnosis, I spent quite a bit of time at the bottom of the ladder after getting that diagnosis of feeling, you know, disconnected, lonely, and a lack of agency around that, around, you know, just not knowing what to do. So that was my story from that place. If I got some energy and moved more up the ladder and was more mobilized, then my story would be one of, well, sod the medical industry anyway. I'm going to go off and do my own thing. And what do they know? Which wasn't very helpful either. It was only when I could get into ventral vagal that I could actually find some curiosity. And the story then was one of, well, what might the other possibilities be here? And also could find a sense of collaboration. So it was from that space then going back in to meet the neurosurgeon and also finding gratitude, being able to be thankful that actually he was just trying to look after me, and he was very perplexed by this diagnosis, and then asking to, if we could collaborate to find a second opinion outside the jurisdiction. And it was a very moving experience, because I can remember being in that space. And as we had this conversation, you could see the cogs moving in his mind and him coming into this ventral vagal space. And I remember him saying, well, actually, one of the top neurosurgeons in America, I know him very well, and we could just send him your slides and see what he thinks. And then the diagnosis came back not to operate. So that was a real example to me of actually the power of working with this hierarchy. And I think it's also important to bring in the third element, which is around co-regulation. The third aspect of the theory is that we're born needing co-regulation to survive, and then we need it to thrive. So when I was talking about that brain example, to get up to ventral vagal, the best way for me to do that at the time was actually in co-regulation. It was with other people who were very anchored in ventral vagal themselves, who were very steady in themselves, that could then help me come back up the ladder.
Mm. It's interesting, because Lisa Feldman Barrett was saying something very similar in terms of, you know, our emotional states kind of regulate one another's body budget. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I was actually talking to a friend of mine this week who is clearly stuck in this sort of dorsal disconnect. He was saying, you know, I know what I need to do, but he's been through a series of difficulties, and he's sort of like, I know logically what I need to do, but I feel just so stuck in this procrastinated, overwhelmed, disconnected state. And he doesn't really have any immediate community of people that he feels could help bring him up out of that. And I'm sure that many of our listeners might be relating right now even to that feeling, that sort of overwhelmed feeling. I'm actually curious to know more about how our nervous system sees that as a way to protect us, and any other ideas you have about how to get ourselves out of it when it's hurting us and working against our desired outcomes.
Yeah, great question. So our nervous system sees that as protecting us, because that is actually our oldest form of protection that we have. Mm. So if we think about when a mouse has been caught in a cat's mouth, for example, it will play dead. So essentially, this is the same biological mechanism that's kicking in. Mm. And, you know, Stephen Porges talks about, well, one way to do that might be to faint. But then that has some implications for our body budget, right? You know, so another way is for us to dissociate. So it's actually taking us out of the situation to protect us. Mm. And it's such a reframe of thinking about that in that way. And I think actually it can be very healing, because one thing that I've come across for myself and other people, there can actually sometimes be shame when we feel that sense of disconnect as a result of something that's happened. And it's like, why couldn't I speak up more? Or why did I go quiet? And actually to be able to see, well, this is the big guns of your nervous system actually keeping you safe. It can actually reduce that shame, and it can de-shame that experience, and then help us move into some acceptance and awareness that then we can move from.
I see. That's really interesting.
So the theory has been used a lot in trauma. Can you talk to us a little bit about how it helps people in that situation?
It's widely been held in a psychotherapy context, and then I'm really curious, how do we bring this more into our context? So with trauma, it's been very helpful in terms of bringing healing. If we've had a traumatic experience, we can get caught in either of those defensive states. So we can either find ourselves living in that mobilized state a lot, where we're feeling on all the time. We're being hypervigilant. It's really hard to switch off. It's really hard to relax. And our pace is faster. And there's this sense of inner urgency that can become our normal. And that sense of ease and that sense of curiosity becomes more elusive. So that, and Deb Dana uses the term home away from home. So that sympathetic state can just become our home away from home. And we're going to always be moving through the states. A resilient system is one that is a flexible system. But with trauma, we can find ourselves getting stuck there. Or we can be stuck in that dorsal state where we just feel we just can't get that energy back. We just feel stuck in that sense of overwhelm. So this theory has really been supportive in working with people with the trauma to give them a framework to have some understanding and insight and befriend their nervous system. And then from that place to then build some tools to help to move back up that ladder. And what's interesting, there are different tools that we will use to move out of dorsal than we will use to move out of sympathetic. So, you know, when we're in that dorsal energy, actually, it's more about kindling your energy. It's about what are the little things that we can do that can help our energy to rise again.
Can you give us a couple examples of the tools you're talking about?
Well, perhaps if I give you a little bit of context first of how I notice it. You know, I have quite a few people come in for coaching who have experienced burnout. And they actually, their home away from home might be more sympathetic. And so they're used to having a lot of energy. And, you know, it's about, you know, their pace is faster and they're used to living in that space. And in fact, to drop down in dorsal for their nervous system feels dangerous. If they start to tip, their system will take them right back up. What else can I do? And what else can I focus on to keep moving? So if somebody finds themselves in dorsal from something like burnout, that can feel quite terrifying, actually, because it feels so unfamiliar. And I'll often hear people saying, you know, I just want to get back to my running. I just wish I really had the energy to be able to do what I used to do. So they're trying to apply those same strategies that usually work for them then when they're in burnout. But actually, that is too much for your system. And it doesn't stick. So it's about rethinking our strategies if we find ourselves in a dorsal space. And it's about what can help us just bring a little bit of energy. So, you know, instead of running 5 or 10 Ks, it might be literally just being outside in nature and going for a bit of a walk till you get some of that energy back online. I would say my home away from home is more dorsal. That's where I'll go to if I'm feeling under pressure. So, for example, for me, I start my morning every morning with a very slow routine. I start with toe turns, actually, of just bringing some energy into the system to get the energy to rise. And then when I can get some energy, then I can do something that's more energetic.
Tell me a little bit about how this thinking works in the leadership space. How are you bringing it into the leadership space?
Well, in a few different ways. There's that understanding if people have experienced burnout. So that's one application that I find to be really helpful. And for leaders, I think it's this understanding that if we want to do our best thinking as teams and in groups and organizations, the more we can cultivate that sense of ventral vagal together, the better the thinking and the more we're going to be able to collaborate. Because when we come down that ladder into that mobilized energy, actually the story is one of separation. We actually start to become disconnected. And the same then when we're in dorsal, we have a sense of disconnection. So I love when you start your podcast that you ask each other how you're feeling. That's a way of bringing that sense of connection in. So I think that's a real application for leadership. It's making time for the things that actually we intuitively know that work. I think that's the other thing about polyvagal theory that I find myself and see working with other people. We intuitively know this. I think this is old ancient wisdom. Polyvagal theory is just making explicit what we already know. So I think for leadership, it can just give us more of that business case of actually why it's important that we take time before we try to work on a problem, that we take time to connect, that we maybe come into a practice where we come into the breath, that we can land in the space together. And the other aspect, which I really love, is this idea, if we think that we're always somewhere on the ladder, so we're going to be dysregulated. We can't live in that ventral vagal space all of the time. So if we take that forward, we're going to have dysregulated systems talking to dysregulated systems. And we're going to have what we call rupture. Ruptures will happen. And I think that's very liberating to bring into leadership spaces, because I think sometimes we're scared of ruptures or we feel that a relationship is failing because we've had a rupture. But actually to think, well, this is part of the process. We're going to have ruptures and we can repair. So there's something liberating in that to me to bring into leadership spaces.
What's really interesting here is that, you know, there's a big narrative around psychological safety amongst leaders and teams and so on. And it can get a bit polarizing, you know, it can sort of almost feel like an entitlement to feeling safe, when in fact, you know, what we're talking about here, the most fundamental safety system, which is really your ability to kind of monitor your resources in the environment. So I'm interested, this idea of rupture and repair as like the underlying mechanism of psychological safety. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, to me, I think it can really underpin psychological safety, in the sense of if we can to come in with that knowledge where we're going to have ruptures and we can repair. And actually, there's another step. When we do repair, our actual relationship will become stronger. It's like that, the Japanese art of, you know, where they mend the pottery with gold. I can never remember the name of it. I'm dyslexic, but you know what I mean?
Kintsugi, I think.
Yes, that's, actually, our relationships will become stronger as a result of, well done, Scott, for remembering that.
Proud of you.
Yeah.
That cold shower I took today.
Without that, if we're trying to avoid rupture, or we're trying to gloss over it, you know, well, we've ruptured, so we'll just bypass that. To me, that will reduce psychological safety, because we've actually not dealt with what's, you know, what needs to be dealt with. And again, I think we have instinctive wisdom about this. I remember there's that study that Google did, Project Aristotle, where they looked at the 5,000 teams. And they had a lovely line, something like, what makes a high-performing team is the ability to talk about what's messy. And to me, that's rupture and repair. Let's talk about... And actually, to be able to talk about that in that language of dysregulation, I think also can help us to stay grounded in our own ventral system and not take it as personally, you know. So, and I think context is also very important with that. If I know what's going on for you, I've got that context, and I'll understand that, you're a bit more dysregulated at the moment, because I know what's going on. Because there's that human side of us where we'll take it personally, right? If there's something going on, we'll do, what did I do? Or, you know, what did I say? So to take it into that biology of regulation can help us stay out of taking it personally, and to, come from that language of dysregulation.
Hi, this is Emma Sinclair, business psychologist, occasional co-host, and fan of the Evolving Leader podcast. There are now over 100 episodes with an incredible list of guests encompassing a broad range of disciplines, all handpicked by us to help you, our audience, understand and overcome your greatest leadership challenges. We have so much more to come, so wherever you get your podcasts, please subscribe, share, rate, and review. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
I was reading your article. I loved that you included the Stephen Porges quote, "If you want to improve the world, start by making people feel safe." It's a beautiful idea. I don't know if you want to add anything to that. Because I have this, not to go on too much of a tangent, but in the work that I do with emotional intelligence coaching and things, and sometimes that leads to conversations about areas that people need to sort of find healing in the sort of the stories they hold and the things that inform some of their emotional reactions and behaviors that maybe aren't so helpful. And as we talk about that, it's led to a couple times where I've been discussing with people this idea that, you know, the best way we can impact the world around us is for us to find our own healing. Is that kind of, you think, what he means here? And is that kind of your North Star in some of this as well?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about that. Yeah, I think pathways, finding the pathways that can take us to a sense of healing is going to does increase the amount of safety that we can have. And I think actually increase how much we can come back to who we really are and coming home to ourselves. Yeah. So I do think that that's a key aspect of it. And I do see bringing regulation into our nervous system as part of that journey as well. And that is part of the work that I love to do, is actually thinking about that from a physiological perspective. So, well, how do we actually bring that regulation into our system? And one of the teachers I've worked with is this wonderful man called Stephen Terrell. He's based in Texas. And luckily for me, he has a love affair with Ireland, so he comes here quite a lot. And he has developed a system of offering regulation to the nervous system as a way of bringing that sense of safety and connection. So we could have a go with that if you're curious.
Yeah,
I'd love us to turn this show now into a very practical experience of your work. That would be amazing. I think as Scott said, we both need it right now. Yeah. So
okay. So how long will we have in terms of to experiment with this? So I'll have a parameter.
Okay. Well, we've got 20, 30 minutes we can play with this. So okay. You can do as okay. short or as long as you like. Just
okay.
Take okay. us on the journey.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first part is actually to ask permission of your system, because that's another aspect of polyvagal theory, is that our nervous system likes choice. So to bring choice in as much as we can. So I'll describe what we'll do, and then I'll just get you to check in and just see how that's landing in your system.
Can I just pause for a moment? Sorry, because I think just before we launch in, that's a really important idea. And one that is easy to gloss over, that when you're doing something like this, which is a whole body thing, that you don't separate the mind from the body, that you actually pull the two together and you go, I've decided to do this. I think it's easy to gloss over, but it's quite an important idea. So I really love that.
Okay. So just check it in with your system. We'll just take a moment to settle on the chair. And then I will just offer our awareness to go from your left shoulder to your right hip, and then from your right shoulder to your left hip. And what we're doing there is just offering your heart and your lungs a little more spaciousness. Then we'll offer our awareness down to your right adrenal, that's just nestled above your right kidney, on just behind your waist. So we'll just offer our awareness. We'll hang out there for a couple of minutes. Scott, you're already there. And then we'll go over to the left adrenal, that's just nestled above your left kidney. And then we'll go up to the brainstem. And we'll offer our awareness there. And then we'll just have a few moments of integration and a little bit of spaciousness. So just checking out how that lands in your system. If that feels okay and we can proceed with that. That's nods. We're getting nods. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So just taking a moment just to feel your body on the chair. feeling your feet on the ground. You might imagine the breath coming up through your feet, up through your legs, creating spaciousness in your vertebrae, feeling taller in your posture, and then coming down the front of the body in softness as you breathe out. Just inviting the shoulders to soften. And then bring in awareness to your left shoulder, right hip. And you might imagine a band of light or warmth just gently going from your left shoulder to your right hip. Just gently inviting your heart and your lungs into a little more spaciousness. And there's nothing to do here. And all your parts are welcome. So left shoulder to right hip. And perhaps just imagining that across the back of the body. Left shoulder to right hip. Then floating our awareness over to the right shoulder, to left hip in the opposite diagonal. Again, perhaps warmth or light. Just gently inviting your heart and your lungs into a little more spaciousness. And all your parts are welcome. Everything is welcome here. You might imagine that across the back of the body, right shoulder to left hip. And then floating our awareness down to your right adrenal. It's just nestled above your right kidney, just behind your waist on the right side of your body. This pyramid-shaped adrenal. And don't worry if you can't connect with it. You just can go with the intentionality, just offering our awareness. Just inviting your right adrenal, right kidney to rest back into our awareness. Perhaps surrounding it with warmth or light. And just offering gratitude for all that it does to keep you safe. Nothing to do here. Just offering your right adrenal to rest back into our awareness. And all your parts are welcome. Any thoughts are welcome. No expectations here. This pyramid-shaped adrenal just behind the right side of your waist. And perhaps a sense of ease reverberating up to your diaphragm. A little more spaciousness for the diaphragm. And then floating our awareness over to our left adrenal. Slightly higher behind your waist on the left side of your body, this crescent moon shaped adrenal that's just nestled above your left kidney. So again, just offering our awareness inviting your left adrenal to rest back. Perhaps bathing it with light or warmth. Nothing to do here. And all your parts are welcome. Offering our awareness to your left adrenal. Nothing to do here. And then floating our awareness up your spine, up to your brainstem, so just where your head meets your neck. This highway of nerves, start of the vagus nerve. And just inviting your brainstem to rest back into our awareness. Offering our thanks for all that it does to take care of you in your life. Perhaps bathing it with warmth or light. Nothing to do here. Perhaps a sense of ease reverberating out from your brainstem to the muscles of your face, your jaw, your neck. Just offering our awareness to your brainstem. Nothing to do here. Then we might imagine a triangle from your brainstem to your right adrenal, left adrenal, and then back to your brainstem. What we call a triangle of healing. And then from there, just taking a moment or two for integration. And although I won't be talking, I'll be right here with you. Just coming back into this space between us, and perhaps just landing in the words of Jeff Foster. He says, listen with your entire body. Hear yourself. Hear the other person. Hear the silence between the sentences. Let the silence linger a little while longer. There is no rush. There's no better moment to get to. Silence doesn't always need to be filled. Be a little more naked, a little slower. Know a little less about what you're about to say. Be a little less prepared, a little messier, a little more willing to expose your vulnerable heart. Be surprised by your own responses. Don't numb yourself with the same old stories. Stumble if you need to. It's okay. You are held.
That's beautiful. Thank you for that. I do feel much, much more centered. John, how are you feeling?
That was incredibly deep. I got into a very deep state very fast. And I'm interested, Kerry, you know, for people who are listening to this and hopefully have experienced something pretty powerful there, how does this differ from mindfulness and meditation practices that they might have tried in the past? What's your thinking about what we're doing there in this exercise?
Well, it's very related to mindfulness. You know, there's a lot of links there. I think with this, we're just bringing more intentionality into the nervous system. So it's giving us points to land on, and we're also doing it in co-regulation. Yeah. Because I'm with you in this, so we're inviting that sense of co-regulation, where mindfulness isn't always, but can be a more individual activity, and this way of working can feel safer for some people, because we're being explicit, we're following a protocol of how we're going to work. So that might not always be the case. Like I love a breathing practice myself, you know, and I know that this sometimes can feel safer for some people. It can feel more accessible.
Yeah, I can see that. What's next for you, Kerry? What's on this journey that you're on?
Yeah, what's next for me is, well, keeping on deepening my understanding of this work and bringing it into organisations, and then weaving it together with somatic practice. I love creating spaces where people can come together, connect in community, and resource each other. So that's something that I'm really passionate about.
So for our listeners who are, you know, spread around the world, you know, is there a central resource they're interested in doing this work? Which, by the way, folks, you know, Kerry talked about this earlier. This isn't, you know, a luxury of time. This will help you become more open, more curious, more collaborative, being able to see things more clearly. So, you know, this kind of work is important. So how and where from a around the world perspective can people find a resource to support them if they're interested in doing this work?
Well, there's the Polyvagal Institute, and there's Deb Dana's website, Rhythms of Regulation. And then my website is kerrycullen.com, where I've got information about the work that I bring to organizations of translating this work. Mm. And then Stephen Terrell, if people are interested in what we've just gone through, I could send a link to his website as well as something to explore.
That'd be brilliant. We can put all that in the show notes, of course. Is there anything else that we should be asking you before we close our time with you?
Yeah, well, one thing came to mind. John, you touched on the importance of choice and how important that is for our nervous system. And I think there's something around that, around creating space for us to actually be able to have choice, which is important for us to recognize. If we're going fast, actually it's more challenging for the system to tune in and know, is this a yes, no, or a maybe? So there's something around pace and actually slowing things down, so we actually can have that spaciousness for that interception to check in and know, actually, how are we connecting with this? So that's one thing that's come into mind. And then if we looked at how story follows state, so bringing curiosity, well, how then do we change our physiology to change the state? So one way as a possibility, as a pathway, is what we've just experienced through Stephen Terrell's work. But what might be other pathways that work for you? I heard you mention the cold water immersion and the research around that. I'm a cold water sea swimmer myself. That's another pathway. You know, what feeds our ventral, what really fills us with awe and wonder, and how do we orientate towards that more in our life, both in terms of, you know, practice and also the micro moments. I love Deb Dana talks about savoring those micro moments. She calls them glimmers, that are all around us, these glimmers. So slowing down to bring our awareness to those glimmers, to savor them, that can help then feed that ventral system and, you know, actually nourish our nervous system. So at a very practical level, again, the stuff that we intuitively know, but just becoming more explicit about that.
Yeah.
Well, this has been an amazing way to bring my Friday to a close. I'm very grateful to you, Kerry, both for sharing your work, your journey, and also leading us through that practice. It's a bit of a departure for the evolving leader to do something, give over a bit of time to do a specific practice, and who knows, we should get you back on to do some more with us in the future. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you
really,
so much.
Really enjoyable.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's just been an absolute joy to hang out with you both, and thank you for your brilliant questions. I've got some walking questions to sit with as well, so thank you very much.
And for our listeners, thank you for listening, and remember, the world is evolving. May we each find practices to continue to bring ourselves back to the flow state.